Also joining us is Fahima Mohammed, who's a broadcaster and TV presenter from London. Welcome to you both. Saad Nimr, let me first start with you and get your reaction on what the UN expert Albanese has said. She's a UN special rapporteur on the rights situation in the Palestinian territories, Francesca Albanese. Quote, there are reasonable grounds to believe that Israel has committed the crime of genocide against Palestinians. Israel has committed three acts of genocide with the requisite intent. Well, what's your reaction to that?
Well, that was this morning in the session of the United Nations Security Council, as well as the United Nations General Assembly in many cases, and on that it was also in Palestine. And she addressed the audience with this statement. It is about time. Now, when we are talking about organizations, most of the organizations around the world are admitting that there is a genocide in many accounts, not only three as she mentioned, but even more. But this is a view of their investigation to talk about, you know, three kinds of genocide and war crimes in Gaza. Everyone knows now, and even after the ICC also ruling about, you know, the Israelis that should commit and not to commit any kind of genocide, it is a kind of admission that there is a kind of genocide going on. And now we are waiting to see what would follow in the ICC. However, it's not now about that the whole world do know that there is a genocide and there is war crimes one after another in every day on a daily basis. It's not that the most important thing. The most important thing, what the international community or so-called international community going to do. They are doing nothing apart from, you know, these statements. We heard many statements from so many people in sure. positions, including Guterres himself. But so far, there is no action being taken in order to stop Israel from this genocide or to force Israel to stop the genocide and the war crimes committed against the Palestinians.
Well, Fahima Mohammed, one of the things that occurred was at the UNSC. Well, for the first time, there was a Gaza ceasefire resolution. This was because the U.S. abstained. There were previous attempts where the U.S. vetoed. But some are saying that's a little too late. And it's just a political win where it emphasizes and kind of puts weight on what our guest there from Ramallah said, that these are just statements and words overall. I mean, we're looking at 32,000 Palestinians that have been killed. First of all, why do you think the U.S. went for that? And if you think it's too late for something like that, in this stage, at this stage of the game, and if there is a ceasefire, then why aren't other countries moving to implement it and doing something about it?
I think, in addition to what our guests have just mentioned, I think everyone can see now that in the context, there have been several international laws and principles that have been violated. And because also the journalists are still not allowed into Israel to actually comment and counter whatever has been done. So then it only is left for people to understand that what they've been seeing is the violence, which is continued attacks on the civilians, the infrastructure, the hospitals, which is the international human rights law. Then we've got the Geneva Conventions as well. The fourth Geneva Convention addresses the protection of civilians at the times of war. And as we can see, that it basically has got nothing that they are doing in attempt to actually save or, you know, give them any sort of way out of Rafah when there are statements directly from Netanyahu to actually enter. So these are another violation of these provisions, which is evident, and people are very concerned. We've also got the UN Charter, which prohibits the threat and use of force against territorial integrity or political independence of any state. So the aggression, again, is continuous. And then we've got the customary international law, again, which in the Palestinian context prohibits, you know, genocide. And with the UN now stating that, of course, there are evidence for that. And again, the international criminal law stating the genocide being accountable under this international criminal law includes the deliberate targeting of civilians and systematic violence. So I guess these kind of adoption and principles are now being seen worldwide, and the pressure politically is definitely there, but nobody's implementing it because it's always been lip service. And the port that's being built is even made from the rubble. So they are trying different ways, and even UN spokesmen have said that they are, you know, trucks miles away, you know, basically there to give the aid, but just not being entered. So again, we can see that there is still support for the continuous bombardment and genocide that's happening, and nobody is actually taking any action, like you said. And the reasons being is because there's probably too much at stake for what is the end goal and their own propaganda and agenda for the actual land in Gaza.
Indeed. Well, we're looking now at what appears to be this rift, said number, which has different dimensions to it. I'm not too sure if we can call it a rift, because in words, it's one thing, in action, it's another. But one aspect of it is this U.S. abstention, where it is pretty significant in terms of the way that that has not only been done, but the way it has impacted this relationship between the U.S. and Israel. What do you think about that? Because we hear, of course, the delegation that was canceled by Israel to travel to the U.S., even though their military chiefs did meet. Netanyahu also said this cancellation is a message to Hamas in terms of the way we are dealing with the U.S. But nonetheless, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that the United States were sending a message also to Israel by this, you know, situation in the Security Council. And particularly this message is to Netanyahu. It's quite clear that now there is a kind of a campaign in the United States to separate between Israel and the relationship between the United States and Israel, which is a solid kind of relationship, and they are committed to Israel and are going to continue supporting Israel. Today there was a meeting, you know, to discuss the operation to Rafah. So the Americans are still participating in this war, and they are again going on with Israel on the strategic level. However, there are some problems between the administration and Netanyahu or the government of Israel. What the Americans are trying now to do by meeting Gallant alone and meeting Gantz alone, ministers in the government, or the Israeli government, it means that they are trying, you know, to push down Netanyahu, and they are saying quite clearly that it's Netanyahu is acting on his own interest rather than the interest of Israel. They are still committed to help Israel and to support Israel in all accounts, but at the same time, they want to send this message to Netanyahu, knowing by the end of the day that even this resolution being taken yesterday, it's not going to be implemented, because Israel is not going to implement it. When did Israel implement any of the United Nations resolutions? We are talking about more than 1,000 resolutions in between the Security Council and the General Assembly, and Israel did not comply with even one single resolution. So the Americans do know that, and they know that they are going to support them if there were some pressure going on by other countries, like the what the today Colombian president said, that we should start boycotting Israel if they did not comply with the resolution. This is a good gesture by the Colombian president, but at the same time, let's see other countries what they are going to do and how they are going to implement and force Israel to cease fire and so stop this aggression and this genocide against the Palestinians. I think that the Americans and Israeli do know that Israel is not going to comply.
Well, here's the problem. I don't know if you may see it this way or not, Fahima Mohammed, is the fact that you have the U.S. all-out support when this Operation Oslo Flood started. You have these four previous times that they came and they used their veto. But each time that they're doing that, you have hundreds of thousands of Palestinians that are being murdered, finally getting to the point where they abstain. And then you have, for example, the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin saying civilian death toll is far too high and the amount of aid is way too low, far too low. Palestinians are dying as a result. And our guests there said the U.S. is continuing with its support. Palestinians are dying. People are losing their lives. If you take that out of the context of what's happening, that's what the end result is. There needs to be a way to speed things up. How do you see it?
I just think it's just showing and highlighting the U.S. hypocrisy in Gaza, the U.S. Secretary of Defense's acknowledgement of civilian casualties and insufficient humanitarian aid in Gaza highlights a discrepancy between the rhetoric and action, and the continued military support to Israel amid civilian casualties raises questions about the U.S. policy coherence and commitment to human rights principles. And I think that at the end of the day, it's a political battle as well with regards to the upcoming, elections, as well as in the US, as well as in the UK. And I think a lot of people are just trying to submit to some of the narratives that people are, abiding by the uproar of the protests. And obviously, most people are now on the side of the Palestinians. So they just saying what they need to say. But in the end, the action is definitely not there. And again, there's no point delivering and surrounding all this aid. And at the same time, the aid is actually killing some of the civilians as well while they're distributing it off the air. And at the same time, facilitating and delivering to ensure that they are still providing the military aid. So it's very much a hypocrisy.
Let's take a look at these controversial airdrops, said number, which is another controversy where you have 18 people who have drowned, several killed in stampedes, from what we understand. Again, it goes back to the fact that you have the airdrops, which shows the U.S. intention that it actually cares, but yet you have supplies, arms, etc., that are being military supplied to the Israeli regime.
And I think that this is, the biggest scam we ever heard of by the United States and Israel. Israel will allow Jordanian, Emiratis, and American aeroplanes to fly over Israel to send aid to Gaza. But the American can't pressurize the Israelis to open the gates and the crossings, especially not only Rafah, but we are talking about, more than five crossings between Israel and Gaza, which they used to bring goods through it, more than 500 trucks every day. That was before the 7th of October. Now, America can't even open one or two of those crossings and allow more aid to get in. Especially that the aid is piling up in on the other side of the Rafah crossings in Egypt. So it's already there, but the access is not there because of the Israeli regulations and the Israeli banning of the aid to come into Gaza. Now the Americans are sending these kind of airdrops, but at the same time they can't force the Israelis to open one of those crossings. It's unbelievable. I think it is a kind of a scam, or the American want to show around the world that we are trying our best and we are helping in, getting food to the Palestinians who are starving and dying of starvation, especially north of Gaza. And we are doing our best in the humanitarian issue. And they are trying, to show that they are these kind of good guys. At the same time, they are the one who are giving the Israeli the ammunition and giving them the rockets and giving them the all kind of supplies of to continue this war. And we know that they can stop the war, and we know that they can force Israel to open more crossings. So I think the whole thing is just, a kind of a charade in front of the international community to say that we are doing our best. And in the future, they will say, we helped. We tried, right, and we gave them, some food here and there by air droppings.
Okay, this rift thing between the U.S. and Israel, however, in one respect, seems to be serious, Fahima, where we take a look at, for example, how there was a news source a week or more ago that said this military operation in Rafah, were Israel to go ahead with it, would lead to a shift in U.S. policy. We're looking at one shift that happened at the U.N., the other being the military assistance yearly of the U.S. to Israel. If we've seen the shift at the U.N., do you think the other is going to come?
I think the potential shift in U.S. policy is possibly a significant shift in U.S. policy in response to just Israel military operations in Rafah, reflects the growing international scrutiny of Israel's actions and their consequences, not necessarily what they actually would really do. So conditioning of military assistance could serve as a leverage point for influencing Israel's behavior. But again, to what extent do they have that power over Israel? Or are they still just, again, it's lip service, smoking screens? And again, just like our guest has mentioned, it's just, you know, saying and covering themselves to say we have tried our best so that they are not held accountable. But in the end, they have no control over Israel to make them do whatever they're doing. They're just only there as an ally to give whatever support and at the same time to cover themselves when it comes to any kind of future international kind of criminal investigation. And I think that's what they're actually doing. But obviously, there is so much that can be done that they're not doing. And it's not just the allies, it's also the surrounding countries as well. So there has to be accountability and responsibility, not just for the Western world, but also in the Middle East as well.
Yeah, talking about surrounding countries and this criminal proceedings that may actually involve other countries, there has been a somewhat of a contagion when it comes to stopping arms shipments to the Israeli regime. Canada has halted the arms sales to Israel. Side number, we're looking at Denmark and Italy to have already suspended their arms exports. The Netherlands maybe has ruled the government to do the same. British Parliament, for example, some parliamentarians are calling on the government to put an end, even though the number of MPs is still not enough. What do you think about this trend? Do you think that this is something that's going to involve other countries as well?
Yeah, I think that the public in Europe and in other countries around the world who were going into demonstrations in support of Palestine and try to put an end to the Israeli aggression started to get some results here and there. Well, if you remember, we talked about many times about, you know, the results of this war, and we said there are some changes occurring, and we said that changes on the international level, it will be slow a little bit, but sometimes it might be even much better. Now, I think few countries are starting, you know, to take some actions, and I believe this is a turning point, important point, for the future, to get out from the circle of America, because we know that the Europeans generally, and European Union as an organization in itself, they follow the Americans totally, and they agree with what the Americans are doing and the policies of America, whatever. So to see that few countries here and there is starting to act alone, and now we are hearing also that there are few countries in Europe who are willing to start and initiate recognition of Palestine as a full state. And that is also important. And they are breaking away from the mainstream policies of United States. Yeah, it is the pressure of the people. It's the pressure of the people which, you know, get these governments to start, you know, thinking differently. That might, you know, make the changes on a longer term, not on a short term. Short term, we can see only these few countries here and there who are willing, you know, to do something and to take action. But I was also amazed today with 120 parliamentarians in UK taking this decision, you know, or talking about, you know, stop sending weapons to Israel. Though, as you said, it's not enough, but at least this is a great move which we never anticipated before. Canada, which is an important ally to the United States, Italy, Spain. Okay. So we are talking about few countries, even in Europe or even in America, North America, they are trying, you know, to get somewhere, because the pressure is coming from their own public, and this pressure was a genuine one and really a big one, and it started to do some effect. We hope that other sure. countries also will follow in the same lines.
There are some questions about whether this is just, again, to impress the international community, because some of these export permits is said the approval prior to January 8th will still go through with them being delivered. Nonetheless, because of lack of time, we need to move to the successful campaign that the Yemenis have executed Fahima Mohammed, if you can tell us about the way that this has actually surprised many, and it does remain a successful campaign, and unfortunate that Yemen is one of the only Arab countries to really stepped up to the plate and done what it has. What's your impression of the way that they've gone about this?
Yes, the Yemeni army's targeting of vessels bound for countries supporting the Saudi-led coalition reflects its efforts to disrupt the blockade and draw attention to the humanitarian crisis in Palestine as well as in Yemen. And the linkage between targeting vessels and ending the blockade highlights the Yemeni government's strategic objectives. And I think it has actually created a huge international uproar, and it has actually even made certain countries to actually back off a little bit, because it is going to affect trade and economics tremendously. So again, it was a huge wake up and a huge effort from Yemen. And I think that that was quite brave. And for that to continue, in a way, did actually wake up the international community a little bit more than they expected to actually respond.
And to end the program, the ceasefire talks, I believe, is a good way to put into a question to you, Saad Nimr. What is going on there? At this point, it is maybe becoming a reality that the camp that says Netanyahu doesn't want a solution because that would mean the end of his political career. Do you think that that's true?
Exactly. That's very much true. He knows that the moment that they ceasefire and stop the war, it means the defeat of Israel in its war against Gaza, providing that they said from the very beginning that they are going to eliminate Hamas and the Palestinian resistance and to release all the prisoners, and they failed in doing that. So it is a victory to the Palestinians, and it is the second victory after the 7th of October. This is on the one hand. So Netanyahu, he don't want to stop the war, and he don't want to go to any kind of deal with the negotiations, and he continued to put obstacles in front of this negotiations in order to make the war longer and longer, and he don't care about the prisoners in spite of the fact of these demonstrations going on in Israel by the families of these prisoners. Still, Netanyahu, he prefers his own personal interest rather than the interest of Israel. All the parties in Israel are pressurizing also for these negotiations, including the not only the opposition, but also in his government. But yet, the other side of his government, the right wing, like Itamar Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they are, you know, encouraging him to go on with the war and not to go for these negotiations. And Smotrich, he said it, I don't care about the prisoners, I care about occupying Gaza.
Thank you very much, Saad Nimr, Professor of Political Science, Birzeit University, from Occupy Ramallah. And Fahima Mohammed, thank you so much, broadcaster and TV presenter from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tawe and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 16th verse of chapter Naml.
وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودَ وَقَالَ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ عُلِّمْنَا مَنْطِقَ الطَّيْرِ وَأُوْتِيْنَا مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ إِنَّ هَذَا لَهُوَ الْفَضْلُ الْمُبِينَ
And Solomon inherited David. He said, O people, we have been taught the language of birds, and we have been given from all things. Indeed, this is evident bounty.
So, in the previous verses, we mentioned that the start of the story of Prophet Sulaiman and Dawood is with this fact that they are granted with the Almighty Allah with something called ilm in the 15th verse we discussed. Now, this kind of ilm, this kind of knowledge is pretty much extensive and it actually envelops everything. So, in response to that, they said praise belongs to Allah. Alhamdulillah, الَّذِي فَضَّلَنَا عَلَى كَثِيرٍ مِّنْ عِبَادِهِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ That He favored us above many of His believing servants. Afterwards, the Almighty Allah says, وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودَ And Solomon inherited David, and he said, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ عُلِّمْنَا مَنْطِقَ التَّيْرِ We have been taught the language of birds. Now, the purpose of the Arabic word waritha, وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودِ in this verse is to inherit both wealth and government, not the knowledge and prophethood. Because, of course, prophethood, as we all know, is not something to be inherited. And the knowledge of prophets is not inheritable, either since it is not something to be acquired. In this verse, at first, it points to inheriting Solomon from his father David. وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودُ And Solomon inherited David. Here, commentaries have very different ideas as for the meaning of heritage and what that is. Some believe that it is only the heritage of knowledge. Because according to their own thoughts, prophets do not leave any heritage of their own properties. Some others have mentioned inheritance is confined to property and government. Because this word recalls that concept to mind before anything else. Some other commentators have rendered it into the language of speaking with the birds. But regarding to the fact that the verse is general, and the later Quranic sentences in them, the words are about knowledge and all other kinds of values and merits, there is no reason to somehow limit the concept of the verse to just that kind of knowledge. And as we said in the previous episode regarding the previous verse, it is better to understand the kind of extensive knowledge from this ilm. So, the traditions narrated from the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam have reasoned to this verse before those who said that prophets do not leave any heritage and laid emphasis on the tradition that says we prophets do not leave any heritage. They have reasoned that since the said tradition contrasts the Book of Allah, this is invalid. We can read in a tradition narrated from the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, that when Abu Bakr decided to take Fadak away from Lady Fatima, she heard of the decision and came to Abu Bakr and said, Is there anything in the Book of Allah that you inherit from your father, but I do not inherit from my fathers? This is a wrongful thing. Have you forgotten the Book of Allah and put it behind you where it says, "And Solomon inherited David"? And then the Holy Quran continues this verse and says, "And he said, O people, we have been taught the language of the birds." على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, as we said, dear listeners, this heritage is not any kind of normal heritage. This is the heritage of government. This is the heritage of knowledge, and not that of prophethood, because prophethood is not something to be moved on to the next generation. وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودُ. And Solomon inherited David. So, anyway, the verse continues saying, وَقَالَ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ عُلِّمْنَا مَنْطِقَ التَّيْرُ. This is the continuation of the 16th verse of Surah An-Naml. وَقَالَ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ. And he said, O people, we have been taught the language of the birds. عُلِّمْنَا مَنْطِقَ التَّيْرُ. So, some claim that the application of language and speaking for non-human beings is not correct, save as a metaphor. But if a non-human being also utters some kinds of sounds and words which are actually meaningful and indicate some matters, there is no evidence not to call it speaking, because speech is often any words that communicate a truth and a concept. Of course, we do not want to say that those special sounds that sometimes some animals produce because of anger or wrath or pleasure and consent, or as a result of pain or a sign of affliction unto their children, are called language. No, these are some sounds that they bring forth out of their mouth at the time of a special mood. But as we see in these verses of the Quran, Solomon communicates some matters with Hupo, and he, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, sends a message by Hupo, and then he asks for its answer from the bird. And this shows that besides the sounds that they produce because of their moods, animals can speak in some particular conditions by the command of the Almighty Allah. Brothers and sisters, we will continue our discussion regarding this verse, this 16th verse of chapter Naml, in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Russia Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
It was the 11th time the British capital had played host to another national demonstration against the US-led Israeli genocide of Palestinians inside Gaza. Coincidentally, this march was taking place on an auspicious day for Palestinians. March 30th is commemorated as Land Day to mark the 1976 Israeli killing of six Palestinians and the wounding of scores more who had gathered to show their affinity for a land that has literally witnessed the constant shedding of Palestinian blood. In an act of solidarity with Palestine, central London showed it would not be letting up on the pressure. Flash forward to this most recent attempt to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its people, and it's clear the UK is being blasted for its complicity in allowing a ceasefire motion to go unacknowledged by Tel Aviv. A comparatively small counter-demo by pro-Israel supporters was peacefully drowned out by pro-Palestinians. The protesters taking part in the demo had a variety of reasons why their presence on the marches mattered.
We just want to bring this conflict into the consciousness of everyone, so everyone understands what's going on here. You know, children being slaughtered, you know, women being slaughtered, schools and hospitals just completely destroyed. You know, it's just inhumane. It's just beyond imagination.
We have to stop this. We have to. Don't you? No one can be blind to what's happening. It has to stop. It has to stop. Showing ourselves like this, demonstrating how horrified and outraged we are, and then boycott Israel.
Demonstrators have pledged to keep turning out in the streets to protest against the genocide in Gaza until there's a cessation of violence and justice for Palestinians. Amina Taylor, London.
In Paris and across France, major rallies were held on Palestinian Land Day, which recalls the events of March 30th, 1976, when Israelis killed six unarmed Palestinians and injured 100 others during protests against Israel's confiscation of Palestinian land. The United Nations Security Council finally passed a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza, but Israel continues to trample on the most basic human rights. Its main arms dealers and political bodyguards, the United States and Germany, have taken no steps to prevent Tel Aviv from murdering even more innocents. The casualty count in Gaza is now well over 100,000, with more than 32,000 Palestinians killed and 75,000 people injured in less than 6 months. Israel continues to do what it once virulently denied ever doing, illegally bombing hospitals, and even arresting scores of doctors and patients in just the last week. Despite spreading famine, Israel has told the United Nations it will not allow any food convoys into northern Gaza, which the UN Secretary General described as a moral outrage. An investigative report just revealed that a French arms company sent nearly a ton of machine gun parts to Israel in October, which were likely used against civilians in Gaza. That contradicts the longtime stance of Paris that the arms it exports to Israel are purely defensive. Christians in Gaza are celebrating their holy Easter weekend amid the invasion, carpet bombing, and famine. Hundreds of historical sites, including many churches, have been destroyed by Israelis in what's been deemed a cultural genocide. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
On the third Friday of Ramadan, tens of thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a and several other cities, renewing their unwavering support for Palestinians. Some held banners that read, "We are entering the 10th year and the Palestinian cause remains our priority."
We're entering the 10th year of our resistance against an all-out war on the Yemeni people. We are here today to show our continuous support for the Palestinians in Gaza and across the occupied territories. When the countries that possess enormous military capabilities failed to support the Palestinians in Gaza and even conspired with the Israeli regime against them, the war-stricken Yemenis came out to support their oppressed brothers. They left the world in awe with a united front and a soaring popularity in the region.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to retaliate against the US and the UK airstrikes on the Yemeni cities. They also pledged to escalate their naval operations as long as the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians and the aggression against Yemen continue. Yemenis also slammed the United Nations Security Council for its failure to put an end to the Israeli atrocities in Palestine, despite its recent ceasefire resolution.
We consider the Security Council complicit in the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The United States manipulates the Security Council and the United Nations based on its interests. That is why the U.S. used its veto power three times to prevent a ceasefire in Gaza. But besides that, the Security Council resolutions are ineffective in ending the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza.
The problem is not with the Security Council or the United Nations, but with the United States, which has the power to control and manipulate these international organizations. There are many binding decisions that have not been implemented because Washington uses its power against the weak and oppressed people of the world. It is necessary to find an effective mechanism for the Security Council because there are many countries that are yearning to be liberated from the Western hegemony. The events that the world is witnessing in some African countries are a clear proof for this desire for change.
On Thursday, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, criticized the US and the UK for exploiting the humanitarian situation in Yemen. He slammed them for threatening to cut the UN-provided aid to Yemenis in order to stop the country's naval operations. Al-Houthi asserted that, according to the US officers, the American Navy has not faced such a humiliation in the international waters since the 19th century.
Neither the military aggression against Yemen nor the cessation of the supply for humanitarian aid has succeeded in halting Yemen's naval operations. Furthermore, officials state that the ongoing Western aggression only serves to motivate the Yemeni army to continue enhancing its capabilities. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
In a fervent display of solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza, a high-profile event dubbed Palestine Freedom Conference was convened in the capital, Islamabad. Political leaders, scholars, and representatives from various advocacy institutions gathered at the conference to condemn the ongoing Israeli atrocities in Gaza and to advocate for the rights of Palestinians.
The United Nations role is getting more and more important. But we see that United Nations is going on the agenda of Israel and the agenda of America. They are not doing their good efforts to stop this war. beside stopping the war. They are provoking the war. They are supporting the war. United Nations should take important steps to stop this war.
The event was aimed at amplifying voices against the relentless Israeli attacks on unarmed civilians in Gaza. Scholars and experts also slammed global powers for their role in perpetuating the ongoing genocide and supporting the Israeli regime.
We are not expecting much from the United Nations. More than 3,000 innocent men, women and children have been killed. But the UN has no courage to stop Israel from doing these inhuman acts in Gaza. Muslim leaders have taken no effective step for a ceasefire in the besieged territory. They should feel shame for their silence on this massacre.
The gathering denounced Israel's military aggression against Gaza and emphasized the importance of upholding the international humanitarian law. The conference underscored the urgent need for international intervention to halt what it described as the bloodshed in Gaza. It also called for practical and immediate steps to alleviate the sufferings of the war-stricken Palestinians.
Participants in the Palestine Freedom Conference pledged to continue their efforts for the people in the Gaza Strip. They vowed to mobilize the support for the implementation of the UN resolution that called for an immediate ceasefire in the territory. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat on Wednesday in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Amir Abdollahian met with Turkmen President Sardar Gurbanguliyevich Berdimuhamedov. The Iranian top diplomat also met with his Turkmen counterpart Rashid Meredov. During the meeting, both sides expressed satisfaction with the progressing relations between the two countries.
The volume of our trade is boosting significantly, and with the agreements we signed today, we expect a jump in our trade. We will also increase our cooperation in the field of electricity and gas.
Pursuing the memorandum of understandings assigned by the both countries' presidents in 2022 was also one of the main goals of the visit.
One of the main goals of the visit was to pave the way for Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's visit to Turkmenistan in order to pursue the agreement signed between the two countries.
According to Iranian officials, the relationship between Iran and Turkmenistan is not just a neighborly relationship, but a relationship of brotherhood, and they seek to deepen the ties as regional policy is high on the agenda of the Iranian president's foreign policy. The Iranian foreign minister's visit to Ashgabat is aimed at consolidating bilateral ties. Iran and Turkmenistan enjoy good relations as two neighboring countries, and now Tehran and Ashgabat are planning to further boost their relations in various fields, including trade and economy. Farzan Ashuryun, Ashgabat.
In the holy month of Ramadan, and as part of its commitment to Al-Quds International Day, the Islamic Republic of Iran, via its embassy in Damascus, has distributed several tons of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees and resistance factions in Syria. The convoy included essential food kits as a gift from the Iranian nation.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and the Axis of Resistance stand by the oppressed Palestinian people in the face of the Western and American support for the Israeli entity, which has not ceased its crimes against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Today's gathering comes within the framework of supporting the resilient and patient Palestinian people.
This gift is part of a series of annual donations offered by the Islamic Republic of Iran to Palestinian refugees during the month of Ramadan in several Syrian cities. According to Palestinian officials, this large amount of aid delivered by Iran is a message of solidarity with and commitment to the Palestinian cause.
This is a significant step within the framework of Iran's support for the resistance of the Palestinian people. This support has been reflected in all forms and means since the victory of the Islamic Revolution under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul, and whose legacy continued with the leader Imam Ali Khamenei. Therefore, we as Palestinian people and resistance factions appreciate this gift and everything that the Islamic Republic is providing.
The Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran for this gift that is presented every year to the Palestinian people.
This aid, provided by the Islamic Republic of Iran during the month of Ramadan to the Palestinian people, is considered as proof of Iran's great role and the interdependence between the Iranian and Palestinian people. These activities confirm the loyalty of the Palestinian people to the axis of resistance, in addition to the fundamental and strategic role of Syria and Iran in the axis of resistance.
With this humanitarian aid, Iran demonstrates that true support lies in actions rather than words, and it reflects the enduring place of the Palestinian cause in every Iranian's heart.
This gift is not only a gesture of love from the Iranian leadership and people. More importantly, it underscores their unwavering commitment to help their Palestinian brethren wherever they are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Pensioners rallied in hundreds of towns and cities in France against President Emmanuel Macron's determination for even more austerity cuts amid the inflation crisis. When campaigning in 2017, Macron promised he wouldn't cut pensions and that their purchasing power relative to inflation would be preserved. 7 years later, inflation has progressed 17%, while pensions have been increased just 8%. Along with his widely protested pension rollback and age hike by decree in 2023, the gap between inflation increases and pension increases may explain why perhaps no sector of society has turned against Macron more than retirees.
Think about it. How is an elderly pensioner who is largely stuck at home and unable to work is supposed to make up this gap? Now add in the increases we all see in food, heating, and electricity prices, and you can see why pensioners are so upset with Macron.
Oh, on n'est pas malheureux.
I'm active in senior citizen politics, and several years back, many pensioners would not be interested when we would distribute information leaflets to them. They'd say things like, oh, we're not unhappy, or others are poorer than us. But I can report that in recent months, no pensioner is saying that or refusing our help. That's how bad it's gotten in France, and especially in the quality of our healthcare.
Paris has warned there will soon be a second round of austerity cuts to the already austerity 2024 budget.
There are so many retirees who live on less than 900 euros per month, and everyone should be able to comprehend how difficult that is. Many of us have also diseases like cancer and diabetes, and I can promise you that none of us asked for them. We deserve dignity, and not to be treated like we are some sort of lower class citizen just because we have finished our working career.
An alternative to public service cuts would be increased taxes on the rich or corporate shareholders. But the Macron administration said it doesn't want to go digging into the pockets of the French. As the average household is still reeling from COVID and the disastrous backfiring of Europe's sanctions on Russia, a report from Oxfam found that France's billionaire families have gained 230 billion euros since 2020. That's enough to give a check of 3,400 euros to every single French person. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
To mark the National Day of Resilience and the 9th anniversary of the Saudi-led war on Yemen, Yemenis have organized multiple events across the country. This year, they are also expressing their support for the people of Palestine as Israel carries out a genocide in the Gaza Strip. Several high-ranking officials participated in these events.
Today, we celebrate the steadfastness and standing up against an aggression that has continued for years. We are defending ourselves and resisting politically, economically and militarily in the face of the barbaric aggression in which the whole world has allied with, and a siege that is still in place. Although 9 years have passed, the aggression is still ongoing and the siege has not stopped. Therefore, we will continue to stand together until the war stops completely.
Officials state that the Saudi-led war continues despite failing to achieve its stated objectives. They argue that the U.S. does not want the war to end, aiming to subdue the Yemenis, especially after Yemen began its naval operations in support of Palestine.
There are lots of agendas that were not achieved by the war on Yemen, and therefore America wants to at least reach the rest of its goals regarding Yemen. But the truth is that a Yemeni victory has been achieved, and we have imposed our presence. We united in political, military, and social levels, so Yemen succeeded in absorbing the strategic transformations, imposing itself in the Red and Arabian Seas, and supporting the Palestinian cause. America has no choice but to accept this reality.
In the meantime, the spokesman for the Yemeni army reported 6 military operations over the past 3 days. These operations included targeting 3 American and British vessels with missiles and drones in the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea, while another vessel heading to Israeli-occupied ports was also hit. The Yemeni army also launched an attack on 2 U.S. destroyers. Yemeni forces also successfully struck the occupied territories with ballistic missiles.
After 9 years of U.S.-backed war and siege, observers believe that Yemen today is stronger than ever, being the only country to have supported Palestine through military action. They argue that Yemenis are confident they are on the right path as long as Washington continues to bombard and terrorize them. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
For more than 170 days, the Israeli operations in the besieged Gaza Strip have resulted in the deaths of more than 32,000 individuals. The latest incident involves an attack on Al-Shifa Hospital, where witnesses have reported extensive atrocities. In reaction, Iranians assembled in front of the Turkish embassy on Monday to voice their indignation.
People gathered here to condemn Israeli genocide in Gaza, urging Muslim states, including Turkey, to halt exporting energy to the regime.
Participants lament that the international community has thus far remained silent regarding Israel.
We as women have come here with our children because we witnessed the Israeli action against Palestinian women and children. Sadly, the international community has remained silent.
Regrettably, Turkey as a Muslim nation exports significant raw materials, including metal, to Israel. If Turkey were to cut off this supply and prevent exports to Israel through the Ceyhan port, it would exert considerable pressure on Israel. We also call on other Muslim countries, like Azerbaijan, which supplies 40% of Israel's oil, to cease their support.
This plea follows Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, urging Muslim nations to cut political and economic ties with Israel. Protesters also cited Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic, who highlighted the role of Muslims in opposing Israel by saying, "If the Muslims of the world united and each poured a bucket of water, Israel would be washed away." Farzana Shuryun, Tehran.
The Limelight.
Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have been subjected to a constant saga of the Zionist regime slaughter and land grabs since October 7, 2023. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israeli occupation forces demolished nearly 460 Palestinian homes last year, 2023, leaving more than 1,000 children without a safe home. This figure does not include other structures belonging to Palestinians destroyed by Israeli regime authorities. Now, the Zionist regime is accelerating land theft in the occupied West Bank, conducting assassinations of resistance fighters and killing children across the territory. despite repeated warnings that continued Israeli aggression would bring about an eruption. The Zionist regime approved the seizure of one of the largest chunks of land since the Oslo Accords were signed by Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization in mid-1990s. Bezalel Smotrich, the ultra-far-right Israeli regime finance minister, declared nearly 2,000 acres of Palestinian land in the occupied West Bank as so-called state lands. Smotrich claimed last week, "We are promoting settlement through hard work and in a strategic manner all over the country." The announcement was made on the eve of the arrival of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in the occupied territories. The Zionist settlement watchdog Peace Now said,